Hi.
So, we're here again.
In a better term.
On better terms. So, I noticed we're drinking the same tea.
As a couple of episodes ago?
Yeah.
Well, it is my tea.
Yes. And we are drinking as much of it as we can before it gets sold out. Again.
Again?
Again.
This is so funny because I just finished a wholesale batch of it and then I have it.
And it's gone.
So it's, I'm like, ooh.
It's going to be gone.
Ooh, sure. Yeah.
We're not going to see the light of day. We better just take advantage of it now.
Cheers.
Cheers.
But just as a recap, this is Bibliophilia we're drinking. I made it for myself for long writing and reading sessions. And Lord, have I been burning the oil lamp on that end.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what we're talking about today.
Yes.
Because I can finally talk about it after holding it for a while. But I did like a really gentle, soft press release about it on Bold Journey. So thank you, Bold Journey, for reaching out and offering me the opportunity to interview and talk about my new projects.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I guess let's begin, because you have been doing art.
I've been doing everything.
Research.
6 hours a day, baby.
It has been a trifle and a blessing.
Blessing?
A blessing.
Do you want your wife
back? Oh my goodness, this is fantastic. It's a fantastic project. I love it.
Oh my goodness. I actually really enjoy this project too, and I feel like those moments when I'm not doing it, I actually feel like I really miss it, which I think is a great sign.
Yes.
And I've been writing it like wildfire. I'm addicted to it. I just can't stop. But to put everyone out of the suspense misery, if you didn't read the Bold Journey interview or checked our Instagram or my personal one, which I do, which is the Tea Hauntier, I'm actually writing a tarot deck that's based on tea. It is a fully tea-centric deck. It covers cultures from around the world. It's not just a tea party theme deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's genuine tea and herbs for now, like the herbals.
Right.
But we can go further into that over my goals. But I'm a little over the halfway mark of writing the drafts for all the cards. All the cards have been duly noted for, I mean accounted for. I've created the whole list.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also hand illustrating these.
Yes.
Which it took a few tries. I think that was the hardest thing, to be honest.
Yeah, just, we had to like buy how many types of paper?
I had to go through 3 different types of paper just because I realized that I couldn't just use regular watercolor paper. I really had to do a heavyweight.
Yes.
Just because of, I mean, if you think about it, like an average rate wider deck is 78 cards. And I knew I had to do this 78 times.
Yeah.
And more, which we'll talk more about later. But I wanted to make sure I had the material that kept it consistent.
Yeah.
And wouldn't fight me back.
Yes.
Which was a huge trial and error. But yeah, we can talk about all that.
Well, I guess we can go right ahead and start with, what is tarot? Because I know everybody has a dark connotation about these cards telling your future.
Well, I can start with where I started with tarot and tell my story now.
Okay.
So as one does during COVID, witch talk became a big thing.
Yeah.
And spiritualism. And it was kind of a fun woo-woo thing at the time. But honestly, when I opened up Cove, a lot of people don't know this, but we were actually above Oh my god, what were they called? Esoterica.
Yes.
And Esoterica was actually our landlords, which was a fully women-owned space, and it was a metaphysical shop.
There we go. That's
yeah, a metaphysical shop. There were two owners.
Yeah.
It was Gabby and Tinkerbell.
Yes.
Tinkerbell actually was the gem queen. She had the crystals and everything and knew how to broke it. But Gabby was actually a tarot specialist. And she started a tarot school. And she was actually training people in tarot. Yeah. So there was a lot of that. And yeah. It was definitely curious. And I knew of tarot, but I wasn't really heavily into it until I had friends that worked in the industry of tarot.
Yeah.
And honestly, from someone who grew up in a Catholic background, and then I moved into Protestant, and my whole family on my mom's side are all missionaries, by the way. Mm. Not even making that up. They legit moved across the world to become missionaries, and they still are. So, very reformed in that sense, very much on the Christian side, but always just felt comfortable around things that were obscure,
yes.
I guess. My gosh, I can't believe I'm coming out with this, but like,
I mean, come on, you were like a goth when you were a little kid.
Was a goth, so not a goth as in like a fashion sense, but basically when I was young, a lot of people were dying in my family. Like, I think at one point we had like 5 funerals in 1 year. And it just kept going and going and going and going just because we had a bigger family, and then people just kept dropping.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, aneurysms run in the family, and there was just a time where everybody, even if they were middle-aged, were dropping off.
Like flies.
Like flies. Yep. So, a lot to cope with there and unpack, but I just associated funerals and death with family being together.
Mm-hmm.
And that really started to mess with me psychologically. Don't want to turn this into my usual therapy sessions, but let's just say that death is an experience to me that I consider familiar and comforting, which is why I really, really enjoyed the concept of starting my school at the mausoleum.
Right.
Mourning and death and sensory are all things that I'm very comfortable with. And also T-spectral is a play on words as a T-ghost. it's also just the connection and being present with the spiritual.
Right.
So
yes.
Yeah. All that.
All that. Because at first we kind of just played on the idea because in the magical community.
Yes.
Tea actually is a gateway to being sensitive to the dead.
Yes. I actually learned that through, let me draw that book out. It was actually recommended to me by Beverly Butterfly. She's a spiritualist in England. And she's a medium.
Okay.
But she reviews books, like metaphysical books. So, tea magic.
But when we actually met other tea purveyors, farmers market tea shops, they were pretty sensitive.
Yeah.
To the dead, too.
And
they weren't even spiritualists. They were just like, oh my gosh, you know, like, this mausoleum feels, you know, intense in comparison to a lot of other places.
So the book I was talking about is Tea Magic, Spells, Rituals, and Divination by Janae Marontet?
Okay.
Marontet. Tate.
Tate?
It's Marontate.
Okay.
Basically, they were talking about how you need to be careful because tea, because it's a sensory thing, it actually opens up gateways to speaking with the dead, which, right. Especially during COVID, right. I lost my grandfather, and I inherited a bunch of documents because nobody else wanted them of our family lineage. And just discovering all kinds of things. Like, I didn't know that my grandmother, which I was close to, had a sister.
Oh.
And I didn't even know she existed. And apparently nobody talked about her because it was so tragic. Ironically, she died of heart failure.
Huh.
Middle age as well. Her name was Mildred, and she, I inherited all her letters as she was in college writing my grandmother. And then she moved here to California, but I inherited all those letters, and I felt her presence. Like, she was just alive to me, and I even inherited letters from World War I. When one of my ancestors fought in the war, right. for America. And oh my gosh, like, these are people I wish I knew more about. And that kind of led me, mixed that with Cove, mixed that with people I knew, just chasing that feeling, I guess. Like,
yeah.
there was a gnawing in me. And yeah, here I am now.
Yeah.
I can definitely say that that side of spirituality is a big part of my life. And tarot is a way of just pointing you in directions that you don't recognize.
Okay.
It's like uncovering truths about yourself, almost.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to describe it. I think it, obviously for entertainment reasons on shows and stuff, ooh, ominous, this is happening, and it really drives the plot, but I really feel like tarot is more of a self-reflection. Yeah. It's a ritual of understanding what you can't see in front of you because you're too involved in the present or in what you see.
Right.
Rather than what's underneath. And it really finds a way to get under your skin in the best way and bring forth, like, your true character is the best way to describe how tarot works.
Yeah. I mean, originally it was just an Italian game.
It is. It was originally an Italian business game, and they would use it to understand different strategies that they could approach doing business with that yeah. they're not seeing. And it slowly evolved to what we have now.
Yeah. I mean, like, some of the cards were actually added during the flapper era.
Actually, yeah, most of the deck we work with now, I think, was designed during the
1920s?
I can look.
But in either case, like, tarot in itself actually has, you know, shifted, thanks to society, into this spiritual thing.
Yes.
And it's crazy because people just outright just want to say, like, oh, I'm a witch, here and there, and it's, I'm just weirded out because, you know, an actual witch is more of like a monster type of figure, and it's what, you know, guys used to actually call, you know, women in a derogatory term before they changed it into the female dog
type. Yeah.
The only reason why that happened, though, was because magic was basically going out of fashion and people just didn't want to even think about it anymore. So I feel kind of jealous. Like, the Japanese can say Shinto, and that's, you know, it literally means the way. Mm-hmm. And that's literally what it was originally called by everybody. you know?
Well, I think it's really great now that people are acknowledging that a lot of the people during the witch trials that were persecuted and killed were healers.
Yeah.
They were herbalists. They were people that were, you know, I guess bedrocks in the community, trying to make the community function the best way possible.
Yeah.
And they were martyred for that ability.
I know. And the thing is, like, a majority of practitioners that did actually commit, like, horrible crime under the name of witchcraft were mostly guys.
Yeah.
They were mostly guys, and they got away with it. And it was
they were saying also, in theory, a lot of it had to do with there were women that owned their own property and stuff, and how do you weaken that?
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
A fully sustainable, self-made woman that was a bedrock in the community and had her own property. Right. I mean, and then here you are, like, spewing rhetoric and trying to make men the more dominant sex. And, you know, as times change and you're building this conservative, idealistic, like, way.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know?
Exactly.
But to answer your question earlier, the Rider deck was invented around 1910.
Okay.
And that's the one that's kind of the standard now. The illustrations were actually created based on art iconography, which is another reason why I was drawn to it, because I used to be an art history major before I pursued graphic arts.
Yeah.
But it's all based on, like, Renaissance and traditional and medieval iconography.
Okay.
And then also, I don't like using the word witch, too, just because people don't realize Wicca is a very new religion, which is a gathering of old religions.
Yeah.
And when you say witch, you usually are associating yourself with the Wicca practices.
Right.
And I just feel like these are all tools, and they're very personable.
Yeah.
And everybody does it slightly different, but I don't think all of us associate as Wiccas.
Yeah.
So, I guess do with that information as you will. It's very frustrating, because the best way to get people to understand where you're coming from is to say you're a witch.
Yeah, because, well, the thing is, people don't know that there's, like, denominations of magic.
Right. Basically. Right. And it's such an ancient practice, just like how there's ancient Christianity. Like, Christianity's been around enough that there's different sects of it, too. So.
Yeah, I know. I was even like, it was funny. I was actually like listening to or watching a video about how a lot of scripture was left in the Middle East because Orthodox Church broke away. And that's why the Crusades was also, like, kind of, like, intense in the marauding.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just wanted to get the scriptures so bad during that time. And you don't realize how much of the religion actually progressed without the scripture. And in this weird evolution, like, we've all actually kind of lost, you know, the history of how old this religion really is, and all the changes it's gone through.
Yeah.
And sadly, that's practically anything that's organized. You know, you go through Buddhism, they have their own denominations. Even Islam has its own denominations. And, you know, magic in itself, like shamanism and sorcery, are in a completely different, like, tier.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a lot of shamans still around there. And they kind of giggle whenever they go to a museum.
Yeah.
Because all of our interpretations were like, oh, they were hunters. That's why they drew these. And he's like, no. No, these are what they wished would happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting world, and there's so much to uncover, but I think there's just beauty, and for me at least, I've been able to find that pause in the world that I needed.
Yeah.
to move forward from all the tragedy.
Yeah.
And definitely feel more connected to feeling like the more I practiced it, the more I realized I'm grateful to be part of this whole system that is the world.
Yeah.
Rather than it's just me and it's only about me. And it's just my story started when I was born. It's like, no, my story started when these other people from my past and my history lived.
Yeah.
And I am a legacy piece. And I will continue to perpetuate that wheel. And there's something wonderful about that.
Exactly.
But I guess drawing the parallels, the reason why tea tarot. Well, tea is a ritual also.
Yes.
And then I went on this journey at the same time during COVID, which I guess I can finally talk about.
Yes.
Whew, this is fun. So basically, I have been a practicing sommelier for almost a decade now. More than a decade. However, all of my training was on hands, in experience, and just discovery.
Yes.
Worked with Chato, worked with Tea Rose Garden, even worked with Lamille and Sun Garden. They're no more. Unfortunately. But I can finally talk about that here because they're no more. Everything I learned was through them and through communicating with them and helping with accounts when I worked at Tea Rose over Caltech and helping build their menus and teaching them how to properly do tea culture, because believe it or not, tech nerds really love tea and the technical side of it.
You were teaching the students at
Caltech. I was teaching them, and I was teaching the managers how to build a proper menu, but at the same time I was learning at the same time.
Yeah, because you came in as a graphic designer.
I came in as a graphic designer, but I also came in, like, helping to try to invent new marketing. And that's when I really started to shine and show my tea passion.
Yeah.
That's when I started blending teas, because we wanted to make seasonal menus. They always had their Christmas tea, but they didn't have, like, an autumn tea or a summer and all these other holidays. And I'm really happy to say that when the pumpkin spice craze really hit, I was like, why do we not have an autumn menu? Autumn is like a vibe. And it wasn't as popular as it was now. Like, now autumn and fall and Halloween is this whole thing. Like, it's some people's full personalities, right?
Yeah.
But back then it was just like, and then there was Christmas, you know? I'm like, hey, no, I think now that people are expressing themselves through pumpkin spice lattes and, like, different kind of fall desserts, like, it just makes an intuitive sense to have tea, a fall tea. So we literally scoured, we checked for pumpkin everything or fall feelings, and I curated a tea for them.
Yeah.
I wish I could take all the credit, but I didn't. But then I invented their pumpkin spice chai. And that kind of segued in. And then also, a lot of people don't know, but Tea Rose does weddings as well. And when they do their consultations, it's a great experience because they come in and they have tea. And that's part of the package, is getting your flowers and stuff curated for your event while having tea. But then they noticed my work and they were like, I wonder if we could have custom blends. So that started to become a package. And of course, because I had to learn how to create a tasting menu, I got trained up in Sun Garden, who was their provider at the time. Yeah. They actually, so a little endearing backstory, when Craig, the owner of Sun Garden, first started, they went to grace the owners a Tea Rose,
mm-hmm.
because nobody was willing to take a chance on them because they started really small here in America. they kind of had a following back in Hong Kong, but they wanted to come here and build roots here.
Craig, you mean?
Craig, yeah. Yes. On Sun Gardens in general. Now they're known as La Mille.
Right.
And they unfortunately sold and merged the Sun Garden side.
Right.
But at the time, he brought in sommeliers. And I would go to the factory, which was in the neighboring city, and I learned how to cup. I learned how to cup. I learned how to taste. I learned how to describe notes. I learned regions and where things came from. And I would spend hours at this place. Or Craig would just come to the shop and inspect things.
Yes.
He taught me, and Grace taught me, and the people at the Athenaeum that have been working in hospitality for years were the ones who taught me how to curate a tea collection, how to build their e-store. And that's really where my story came from. That's where my origin story came from. And it's so great to finally talk about it here, because I couldn't before.
Yeah.
But that being said, back in the day, there was no certificate to be a sommelier.
Yeah. Yeah, there wasn't.
I came in and I learned on the spot, and I grew into my role.
Just to be specific, tea sommelier.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to be mistaken for the original sommeliers, which literally are like
wine
connoisseurs.
Yes.
Which they get whole training, full training, and a pin to even, you know, signify.
I don't even think tea sommeliers were coined until 2008, and at that point they were only like kind of a little kick thing.
Yeah.
Back in France. Like, it was just a very small movement at that time, but
was it by, like, Xavier or something?
What was his name? Here, I can't say it, you say it. His name, it's Francois... Here.
Yeah? Yeah, it's Francois Xavier Demas.
Yes, so he coined the term, and he really advocated for it, but that was, like, back in 2008, I think, or 2005, around there. But you gotta understand, I've been working the industry since... I started working, I think, solidified. I think I worked starting around 2012?
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, before then, I was dabbling already.
Right. Like,
before then, I was going in and out of Chato. I was talking to them. They would actually pair things for me. I was in there all the time. They would comp me to go to their festival, and I would go to the classes. But that was kind of like the start.
Yeah.
But then when I started working at the shops and freelancing other companies, that was really, really hit around 2012. And by then, I started T-Spectral as a blog to kind of capture these discoveries.
Yes.
But really, I went knee-deep until, like, I think I worked from 2012 to, like, I mean, I didn't I'm still technically not officially retired, but I guess away from the full-time aspect of it by around 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then after that, I became a consultant. And the reason why I left was because I did T-Spectral as... I launched it as its own brand.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But anyways, that's where my training came from.
Okay.
And because of this, and because of my thirst for more knowledge, and especially to add, like... basically to just beef up my knowledge and beef up my ability to do more and expand, I went to tea school online. And I went with the Tea Association of Canada.
Okay.
Tea and Herb Association, I should say. And I did that through COVID. And I finished the classes. I finished everything. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm like, it's so great to just finally explain it to people, because it's just like, yes, I am a sommelier, but no, do I have the little paper? No, I don't. Like, because because I worked with the actual people that made this happen. Yeah. You know, like...
Well, back in the day, the high standard was you had to be working at the tea farms.
Yeah.
And if you didn't work at the tea farms, they couldn't take you seriously.
And, you know, I think there was this time where sommeliers were basically making their way into the industry. And there was a lot of defensive people, like master tea blenders and, like, people that were actually on the fields. And they took it like we were trying to pretend to be them.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. We were, basically, we were paving the way so that they could get market deal. They could get a better educated group of people that could appreciate their product. And that, even till now, I feel like that's something that's a stigma that's slowly waning off. But if you get some more purist traditionalists, it's still an issue.
I mean, I think I really appreciate the Taiwanese because they literally brought in, like, boba culture.
And so that's only recent, which I'm really grateful for, because I think what people are failing, back in the day, failed to understand is tea is a very ancient practice.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it isn't evolving.
Right.
I mean, it's like, here's a great example. We all hate the idea that tea was forged in colonization.
Yes.
With the British.
Right.
But we can't deny it.
Right.
There's so much, like, we wouldn't have Sri Lanka and the Darjeeling Estates and India the way it is now if we did not have colonization.
Right.
It's a bitter truth.
Yes.
And to deny it is denying literally, like, 80% of the world's tea.
Right.
You know, it's like you can't just pretend it doesn't exist like an ugly stepchild you hide in the basement, you know?
Right. At which India, being independent now, you know, is capitalizing on it.
Correct. And Kenya.
Yeah.
Africa is doing incredible. And Argentina is doing incredible. Like, these are important things to know. So boba is very frowned upon. Even till now, it's kind of looked at as lowbrow.
Yeah, it's like a children's drink,
which is which I think is kind of crazy to me, because just the amount of craftsmanship and artistry that's coming out of the boba industry right now blows my mind. I mean, when I finally got my hands on the boba book, and I brought this up prior to, like, a few of our recordings, it just is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it took bartending skills and also problem-solving techniques on creating quality tea on the fly.
Yes.
And fuse those two.
Yeah.
And that's innovation. That is the future of tea. It's incredible.
Right.
And I think the same thing to be said, I mean, I haven't read it yet. I'm waiting. I can't wait to read it. It's on my TDR.
Right.
Or TBR. But the first ever tea blending book got released by a blender from Davidson's Teas. Or not Davidson's. David's Teas.
David's Teas. Yeah.
David's Teas. And even till now, especially for tea snobs, like, blended teas, which is what Tea Spectral thrives on, is considered lowbrow. And I understand that thing. And I've talked about it all the time here on Bibliosinensis into Authoris, is I get it. I get it that there's, like, this whole old art form, there's this beautiful ritual, and there's, like, purest forms of tea, but to deny that it exists is ridiculous.
Yes.
So many people get into tea by just simply having the comfort of a tea bag, like a cheap tea bag given to them as a child, or the practice of tea through that, or going to a tea party or a restaurant and trying a flavored tea. Like, you cannot deny that.
Yeah.
You cannot act like that doesn't exist. And me personally, I love doing it because I feel like it really captures a side that people can try. Like, I love how T-Spectral is the threshold of... This is loose-leaf tea. Loose-leaf tea is a higher quality than what you would get in a bag, but it has flavoring in it because it's your approach, it's your gateway into starting to practice with loose-leaf and explore the worlds of loose-leaf and build a palette from there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that do get my tea and get into it start getting into traditional teas and purist teas, and I love that. But they wouldn't have had that opportunity had they not had tea like mine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I know for a while we kept calling Tea Spectral the cocktail of tea.
I still love that. Yeah. But I think the connotation of, like, alcohol in general puts people off.
Yeah.
God, I cannot begin to tell you how often Chin Chin cannot be marketed on Instagram because they keep insisting I have alcohol in that tea.
Right.
Drives me nuts. But, yeah.
But nevertheless, what was this? It's something that should actually be celebrated at this point. I mean, I'm happy that Starbucks actually explored tea as far as they did.
They're still working on it. In fact, I had the pleasure during my career talking with the think tank team of Starbucks and how they pick trends and how they curate. And they really do care. I know everybody wants to make them out to be this, like, giant, heartless conglomeration, but they are genuinely looking and caring and listening.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating the way they translate things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the world of tea, it just keeps growing at this point.
It is. And I feel like it's an exciting era for it, especially with all these new concepts.
Yeah. If anything, we're lacking teachers.
So that's where the sommeliers come in. Yeah. And I guess you did that for me, right?
Yes.
Okay. So with all this knowledge, I was really excited to start my tea school at the mausoleum. But unfortunately, because of the Eaton fire, I'm not.
Right.
And I was so devastated. I think that's an understatement. I just felt like the wind was knocked out of me. I mean, I literally let all my farmers market permits lapse and everything because I was so confident that this is what I wanted to do full time.
Yeah.
And just to have that pride from you is, I don't even know how to explain it. And then I just felt so isolated with the world and the news. And I felt kind of hopeless.
Yeah.
Like, I wasted all my time just building this crescendo of knowledge.
Right.
And my career. And I guess what happened is I started writing, which, I mean, I guess I could tease it here. I'm writing, I was inspired by, like, a mail service, like a storytelling mail service. And originally I was going to build a little subscription kit.
Yeah.
And I called it the Neroli Letters, and it's still happening. But I was going to build, like, a small tea education set where it was approachable. Because that's something that I really think is crucial, is making this knowledge approachable. Because there's a lot of people talking about it in a way that's, like, academic and dry almost, and I just wanted tea to be this thing that was available to everybody, that yeah. they could touch, that they could experience with people in their family from all generations, because it is a ritual, it's a practice, it's usually how you learn about tea when you're young.
Yeah.
So I wanted the Neroli Letters to be like that, so I built this cute little tea witch. Her name's Neroli. And she has an advice corner. And she always somehow, this is her curse, she somehow will always associate your question about life to tea.
Yeah.
And one of the segments that I wrote was about Moroccan mint. And the more I wrote and the more I researched about Moroccan mint, the more I, because I'm a tarot practitioner, the more I could not get out of my head that Moroccan mint is the lover's card. Everything that symbolizes the lover's card is the process of creating Moroccan mint. I mean, even when you first steep it to throw out the water, it's called the spirit. Right. It's the union of the leaves and the mint. And it was like, wow, you know, like, I just couldn't get that out of my head.
Okay.
So I ended up sketching a lover's card, Moroccan mint. And that was literally the first card. So that's when I was like, wouldn't it be so cool to, like, capture these moments of tea culture and just things that make me spark with a tea tarot. So I started at the beginning, like, what is the Fool? It's like, well, that would be Silver Needle, because it's the most innocent, pure from the beginning. You pick it and it still has the tea hairs on it. It's delicate. It's full of potential, you know?
Yeah.
And I just went with it.
Yeah. And it was tea education left and right.
And it was tea education, but it also really pushed me because, you know, obviously after you get to a certain amount of tea or cards, you're like, oh, well, I'm definitely out of my comfort zone here. So then you just start doing more things, like more research. And I feel like I've learned so much. Like, I've really pushed my limits of tea education. Not limits, but I'm reaching new levels, I guess.
You're expanding.
Exactly. And it really put me to the test. And it was rewarding but exhausting work.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And, I mean, Eugene will be too kind, but he won't tell you just the sleepless nights, the frustration of trying to get me to bed, and how it was, I was stubborn, and it would take, like, 6 hours just to process, like, 2 to 3 cards worth of research. Extensive research on the cult, not just the tea, but the culture and what was the significance and the lore and the history behind it.
Every culture has its own perspective along with its language. So in a way, you even had to start thinking in that culture.
Exactly. And it was such a fun, I mean, even till now, I'm still doing it, but the deck is mapped out.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to share a new version of the story of tea with people in a way that, I don't know, I just feel like it has a little bit of everything and people can kind of see where my brain sits, where you learn about this heritage and history and then you take it. But the cool thing is when you learn about this, like, let's say my judgment card is cascaras, which is the bean shell off of a coffee bean. And it's represented through Bolivian cascara. Okay. So it's not necessarily a tea here, but if you go to a tea house in Bolivia, that is considered significantly what people drink as tea. And it's the discarded, like, fruit off of coffee beans.
Is that more of a to save?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yes, it's not a pure tea, but it is considered tea in that culture, and you cannot convince them otherwise. But I got to learn about Bolivian tea houses. I got to learn about how that represents the judgment card. And you know, just trying to fit those wedges in, but then see, if you know tarot, then you automatically associate the feelings and the understandings of the culture of what this cascara bean or the cascara fruit does.
Yes.
And it has natural traces of caffeine. It's fascinating. But it's all piled together.
Yeah.
And the imagery and the visuals all make sense. Yeah. Like how the writer deck was created so that people could understand it because of art iconography. Instead of art iconography, I have cultural understandings and the context of how these teas are used for you to understand the card.
Yeah. It all summarizes that you can't really stay in the pure form of tea when every culture has already created their own version
Yes. of it. So one of my other cards, which was so fascinating for me, because I've, again, I grew up with missionaries. So one of the missionaries that is in my family went to Nepal, and she lives in Nepal till this day. She even married a Nepali man. But every time she comes and she hears about my tea business, she always laughs. And she's like, are you going to have Napoleon tea? And then she always teases me about it because Napoleon tea is pocha, which is yak milk and butter and salted tea. And I'm, you know, when you're first starting, you're like, ah, that's ridiculous. No, I'm doing this stuff. But while I was researching it, I'm like, how could I not incorporate this into my deck? Because it's so much about nourishment and, like, nourishing the soul, nourishing through heritage. I forgot what card it is, but I think it's one of the miners. Anyways, it's a card that represents nourishment and full bodiness, like the weight of having a background in your past.
Yeah.
And calling on that to support you. And at the same time, you get to learn about pocha. And you get to learn about the different ways teas are consumed. And you can tell I really love this project.
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. You didn't sleep.
So. I'm still going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited for people to have this deck. Now that I brought up the judgment card, there are 14 cards as it stands currently that are herbs. Mm. And I know a lot of tea purists out there do not believe in that.
Herb tea.
They don't believe in herb tea being herbs. It has to come from Camellia sinensis. So that being said, I already am starting to work on those 14 cards having a purist limited edition set of cards that you can supplement your deck with.
Yes.
And you could have all Camellia sinensis based teas in your deck if you want to. Or just have a double meaning.
Right.
And learn about it. So that's my next step.
Yay.
And eventually what I want to do, actually, it's inspired off of this one artist. She did the Beneath the Moon book. She also made a deck. Yoshitani? Yeah. She made her deck. And her deck was based on folklore from around the world, but it was so impactful that she created a separate book called Beneath the Moon of the same artwork. And she created, like, she kept all the stories, like a storybook index.
Right, right.
And I want to do the same with this deck. So I'm going to do the guidebook now and then the alternate cards next. But I'm keeping all my research and data so I can do a more fully explained book. So if you're not into tarot, there's a whole book just on the story of tea.
Nice.
And it's gonna read like a storybook, and it's a great introduction to tea that's approachable. And I love that. I'm genuinely excited about that because I feel like every book I've found up until now has been either a recipe book, a little history book. But I think approaching tea as, like, part of culture and lore, almost like a catalyst of fairy tales and stories in that in cultures overall, is so important.
Yeah.
Because that's what sommeliers do, right? We capture the culture and we educate the masses. But that's what I've been working on, and it's almost like a love story to the industry that I love.
Yeah.
And it's my way of taking my ability as a novelist, a writer, someone who's produced stories, a playwright, and take that kind of energy and translate tea history and share it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm so grateful. I'm so excited for this. I'm going to be blunt with you. I generally got off of TikTok after COVID. I didn't want to go back. I have actually gotten emails and requests for T-Spectral to have a TikTok account, and I just didn't think it was something we should have done, considering we don't really have interesting things to add.
Yeah, we don't do frequent.
We advertise on Instagram and stuff, and we do make announcements, but I just feel like TikTok is a medium, like, I genuinely wanted to participate in a way that it's not just TikTok challenges or using trendy music. I wanted to do something where if I created something on TikTok, those videos I would be proud of in a few years.
Right.
I didn't want to follow the trends, and it's something I've been conflicted with for a while, but the more I tell, like, my close followers or the patrons of T-Spectral that I've been working on this deck, and they've seen some of the concept art and stuff, the more they're like, I want to see a TikTok about this. I want to experience this. I want to go through this journey of learning about tea and tarot with you and your illustrations and your art. And I finally feel like I have something to contribute to the TikTok community and to the internets, I guess.
Yeah.
I never really saw myself as an influencer. That's why I genuinely hired influencers and did partnerships like with Charming Life and Mary, because I wanted my tea to speak for me. Mm. I was also way more involved in the creative side of it, like the background. But now I feel like I have something to contribute. So, soon?
Soon. I'm happy that you actually started on this project. It was just the whole concept of going online and actually building T-Spectral through, an online audience. It just wasn't appealing anymore since, you know, the internet is basically now censored.
Well, influencer culture is dying.
Yeah.
And I also feel like with the way the world is right now, people have no escapism.
No, they don't.
And everybody's, I mean, I think the best way I heard it was social media used to be a social platform. Now it's an advertising platform.
Yes.
And I think that's always rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, even me, like, so my bread and butter is T-Spectral, but my side jobs are always freelancing. It's an industry I went to school for. Marketing is my thing. So obviously I've been, you know, updating my resume, going on getting certificates. I'm Meta certified. I'm Pinterest certified. And I will tell you, I feel such a moral pull after I've passed these classes, just with the information I know and the way people use that data, like the big companies, it kills me. And that's one of the reasons why I never wanted to add to the problem.
Right.
And yeah, I had nothing to add that was uplifting other than please come and buy my tea, you know?
Yeah.
And share in this experience with me. But I'm grateful that perhaps with my journey on creating this book, I can bring some kind of social uplifting experience to the public.
The idea that you're actually moving on to print and into a different product segues you into another industry, and allows you to move forward with your knowledge and your curiosity.
Yeah.
Because that's literally what we've been striving for, because I know that we have been going against the trend of the tea industry for the longest mm-hmm. time, because the tea industry wanted to gatekeep so bad, but we are Americans. We don't like gatekeeping. We fight gatekeeping. We find ways around the gate, if necessary. And no longer are we under this, you know, this idea that tea is with, you know, a silver spoon and porcelain teapots.
Or a specific, like, format of creating.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've even been working with, you know, coffee blenders, and we're seeing how Ethiopians actually make their coffee. You know, they sprinkle it with all of this, you know, all of these toppings, these garnishings. My apologies. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of weirded out why they want to actually stop that. You know, especially when the first lesson we got from Norwood Pratt was to keep the culture alive.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that we can't practice beyond Indian culture and Chinese culture and British culture when even the Russians use a boot
on the top.
Boot on top of their heat compressor to make their tea.
I think also Frisian tea is one of my cards, and I love that concept of it's such a niche, specific, upper Germany thing.
Yeah.
But it's enough to... I mean, they have their own printed china, like their own specific patterns.
Right.
Like, come on, man. Yeah. Like, how do you ignore that?
Right.
And how do you ignore boba culture when there's boba in every part of California and they're using leaf? How do you deny this? I mean, here's a fun one that I think is silly but wonderful. Japanese matcha is so trendy now, but now we're mixing it with, like, bananas and mango puree, and it's a whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, we mix it with In-N-Out shakes.
Yes.
Like, come on, man.
It's evolving. It's wonderful. It's exciting. And the fact is, tea is being played with because it is cherished. It is wonderful. It's unique. And it means something different to every single person on this planet, whether they hate it or not. People know what tea is.
Yeah.
It's fascinating like that.
I mean, at this point, I kind of side with the Chinese when they call, you know, original blended, not original blend, original sourced teas that aren't blended as grandpa tea.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. You know, you're going to go right ahead and tell me that you're drinking a regular black tea and you're not mixing it with anything. No milk, no sugar,
like a traditional steep tea.
Yeah, like, I'm happy that you could actually respect tradition, but don't act like, you know, these things aren't moving, these things aren't alive. You know, that's like denying that Native Americans are still around. It's like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? You know? So, at the end of it all, I'm kind of just excited over the idea that the millennial generation had supported this for so long that we have our own ideas of what tea should be used for.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm so happy that you actually completed your education at this point.
Officially.
Officially.
Even though...
Yes.
It's been a journey.
And, yeah, if anything, I kind of got some peace talking to, you know, a fellow co-worker who was Indian, And him explaining to me, like, no, when you go to India, and these people that have tea farms, when they wake up and they talk to each other, that's all that their life is. It's just their farm, their tea farm, and if you ever try to talk to them as if you were one of them, they'll look at you funny, because they know that you don't know. And they're not ready to really tell you anything, because they're just too busy actually dealing with their farm.
Mm.
You know? Like, we're not trying to be tea farmers. And we're kind of happy that you don't have to be a farmer to actually enjoy these things in their extent of, you know, their brilliance, their changes, their, you know, their growth as teas. Because tea never tastes the same every season, every year. But they are grown at Nilgiri, they are grown at Yunnan, they are grown here and there. You can go right ahead and actually join in on the, you know, the pu'er, you know, auctions and start, like, you know, treating tea like wine. But that's not the only place where you can enjoy it. And it's been insane over the journey that we've gone through, having tea be this middle class gatekeeping, like, empire.
I could go into the history of that, because there is an actual history of why that happened, but I don't want to make this episode an extra couple of hours.
Yes, but I guess I just wanted to actually say at last that we can feel safe and feel heard.
Yes.
And be able to commune with a community that is willing to explore tea.
Yeah, so my biggest hope when people get this, and I'm excited for, is somebody that maybe has tea at home on a regular basis, or goes to the cafe and has tea a lot because they like tea.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take this tarot deck or these books, and maybe they're going through something emotionally and they're asking the cards about it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever card comes up, I hope that it reflects a way to where they have enough curiosity, or maybe it resonated with them, but they have this companion tea that they can find.
Yes.
And they can try it.
Yeah.
And not only are they expanding their palate, but they're locking in their entire senses over what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's staying present. It's creating something deeper than the problem or the thing that's bothering you, or maybe it's something that's making you very happy and you want to capture it more. You now have this ability to go out there, exactly what T-Spectral wanted to do, and allow you to create a moment and capture the essence of it with a tea. From a different culture.
Exactly.
Or from a culture you maybe aren't familiar with, but you've heard of. And you can try. And that's where it starts.
That's where it starts. Well, this has been nice. And I hope that we could end and, you know, we could begin where this actually ends. And serenity, peace, at last, and maybe some sleep.
Some sleep.
Some sleep.
Mm.
Till next time.
Till next time. Oh, what cafe would you want to be in
right now? No, I forgot about this. Cafe.
I have been dying to take you back to Black Cow.
Black Cow?
To have a cup of tea and share it with you.
Oh, that'd be nice.
But in the artist, in this, the lieu of this artisan trip.
Yes.
I wish I was still walking onto the parking lot after parking my car at Sun Garden and smelling the entire factory of Earl Grey. and walking into the factory to say hi to people and see through the window that their giant mixing barrel is being manhandled by four other people with giant tea just swirling around, and right when it's finished or created, they give you a cup to try. Mm. Or they're experimenting with their kombucha, just so I can finally explain these experiences. And oh, I miss it. I miss going to the big factories and talking to the industry people.
Yeah. I miss the tap room
at the lineup. With their tea?
Yes. You go right ahead and have all these people coming out of their corporate jobs wearing a suit and tie. Girls are wearing hot dresses. It's dim. You got live jazz. Ooh, live jazz. You are sitting in, like, you know, ox blood chairs. All these fantastic tables everywhere, and you just feel fancy. You know, you can't even enter that place without paying valet. And I remember going there 11 o'clock in the evening for all that, and all I order is tea. And that's when the servers knew I wasn't going to go to the bar, and all the tip was for them.
And then they would give us comp everything.
Yes.
When I think of the tap room, I think of how we always end up, oh, I need to use a restroom. And then we slowly meander into the tea room space that's completely empty.
Yes.
And what I love is they still leave the menus out on the tables, even though it's after hours, and they have a big, like, what do you call that? Like a crescenda?
Yeah.
Where it's just apothecary jars filled with tea.
Yes.
And what I love is whoever their sommelier is there, they have a pretty good variety. So it's cool to just open up the menu and see what their choices are. And yeah. Then they do a little description and such. But yeah, I love doing that.
I love the fact that they always padlock their piano.
Yes!
They have like this giant grand piano, and you can already tell how many people have actually tried to unlock that thing just so they could have some fun.
I love how as the night goes on and people get progressively drunk, we usually end up meandering barefoot, even though we're wearing like fancy outfits, onto the lawn.
Ooh, yeah.
And we get to see like the mountains, the Pasadena Mountains.
Yes.
On the lawn, and you can hear the jazz still faintly playing in the background.
Exactly. And when you return, you kind of see, like, these families that feel out of place. Like, wait, they said it was family friendly. Everybody else is wearing suits.
Yeah, I just know that, I don't know, to me that's just so quintessentially LA or Pasadena culture, to just walk around barefoot in a formal dress.
Yeah, yeah.
Past a certain hour.
I mean, I think it was Paul that actually said that, Professor Elemental. Like, you can have a very, you know, wholesome time in the afternoon, then you become a rock and roll star in the evening? Is that right? And I was like, yeah, it checks out, you know? It's like, you literally can have, like, every lifestyle here in LA in, like, 24 hours, and that, you know, the party never really stops. I mean, it slows down, depending on your momentum.
I think party in LA is a state of mind.
It really is.
And you have to find what your version of party is.
Yes.
When you live here.
Yes.
Whether that's ambitiously climbing the ladder, or hustle culture, or
surfers,
or like, you know, like people like me, where it's like finding that cozy in your community, but it's still a party because you're constantly in communication.
Exactly.
But yeah, LA is a party state of mind.
It really is. Really is.
Yeah.
So, with that, our hopes and dreams.
I guess I'm out of the closet now.
The broom closet. Hey.
Yeah. And I am so grateful to finally find a brainchild that can keep up with my psychotic brain on research and storytelling and art. So I will cheers to that.
Cheers.
Cheers.